one and all, and welcome to Film Fragments, a podcast where we take fragments of an actor, director, and genre and tell you our favorites from their catalog. My name is Brian Sevier, I'm your host, and I'm very excited to welcome you guys to this week's episode of Film Fragments, where today we're going to be talking about our favorite film starring Michael Fassbender. He has not only one, but two new films coming out this month. He has David Fincher's The Killer and Taika Waititi's Next Goal Wins coming out just a week apart from one another, which is absolutely insane. It's a great time to be a Michael Fassbender fan, as he has two films coming out and his first two lead roles in forever. And I'm very excited to delve into his films today, and I'm very excited to welcome today's guest. Our guest today is Michael Chu. Fittingly enough, it feels great having a guy named Michael talking about an actor named Michael. It just all makes sense. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me. Once again, this is going to be a blast, dude. Can't wait to talk all things Fassbender with you.
Cannot wait to gush with you about the man, the myth, the Michael Fassbender himself. Cannot wait to do that. So before we get into talking about Michael Fassbender, I would just love to give you the opportunity to introduce yourself, talk about what you do, what got you into film, and why you love it so much.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm Michael Chu. I have a YouTube channel and a podcast, Woodsboro Retrospective, and currently on hiatus, Chu on This. Love talking movies, loved movies since, actually, funnily enough, because we're talking Fassbender today, his new movie is a Fincher flick. David Fincher is actually what kind of got me into loving film. I was start with Fight Club and then very quickly saw Gone Girl and then re-went back and watched all his other movies and then started to realize, okay, well, movies are more than just, you know, an entertaining thing. There's so many things that go into it, and that led to me watching so many behind the scenes videos and things of that nature, and just diving more into movies in general. And that love has just never died. It's been an amazing journey going through growing up in a time with such good movies. We've been very blessed these past 10 years.
We really have been. We have been blessed these last 10 years. And also a blessing of the last 10 years was me coming across you. Like, we came across each other when
we were both
actively doing YouTube and everything. And then we actually just met for the first time in person a few months ago, which was really exciting. But yeah, it's so great to see how film brings people together and how one person's love of film gets started and everything. I cannot
talk
because I'm so excited to just go into this topic. This is so exciting. So, you know, I always throw these curveball questions at the start of these episodes, and I'm so curious to hear your answer to this.
Okay.
So you were given the opportunity to take one Michael Fassbender character out to dinner, whether it's with your family, friends, or just yourself. Which character would it be and why?
Oh my goodness, that's a great question, especially because this guy has played mostly diabolical people. It's funny because I think my love for his acting began when I first saw X-Men First Class, and I think if I had to take a character out, I would pick Eric Lenscher. You know, Eric, he hates humans, he's got beef with us all, I understand why, but I genuinely think we could have like a nice conversation over a couple beers and chat it up, you know, unpack some trauma together and work through it, man. Show them that we're not so different.
You know, I agree with you about how Fassbender has played a lot of despicable and vile characters. So I guess that I have to go with a character like that because I love this company's products so much. I have to go with Steve Jobs. I feel like I'm obligated to do that, and, you know, I want him to tell me about everything that went crazy with Apple and everything. Then he could basically tell me to go fuck off and everything. And you know what? I would be okay with that. If Steve Jobs told me to fuck off, then so be it.
So be it.
So going into our topic today of Michael Fassbender, I've been a fan of him for a very long time. Like you, the first time I ever saw him in anything was X-Men First Class.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pumped out so many incredible performances throughout the years and worked with so many talented filmmakers across the globe. But yet, even though his name is popular, I consider him to be not necessarily an underrated actor to the sense where nobody talks about him, but he doesn't get the discussion that he quite frankly deserves among some of the great actors that we have working today. So when it comes to Michael Fassbender, why do you think a lot of people are excited whenever they see his name attached to a project? What makes everyone such a fan of him, and what makes you such a fan of Michael Fassbender?
Well, I think the thing, part of it is what you just mentioned, is the fact that so many of his movies have been released few and far between. I think the last movie, like new movie I saw him in was Dark Phoenix, and that was already a few years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I would imagine, as a normal moviegoer, most people have seen Michael Fassbender from those X-Men movies, and he did a phenomenal job in them. I think he was giving like an Oscar-worthy performance, honestly, in a comic book movie, which is few and far between. And it's funny, him and James McAvoy have kind of had similar career trajectories in that way, where they have not really been recognized for a lot of really great filmographies, at least their performances. While they both have had some misses, Fassbender has had probably some more, sad to say, but they've always been good. I've never thought that he was weak in any of those movies, and I think that's what makes me appreciate both of them as actors, but specifically we're talking about Fassbender. He puts his all into every performance, and we've seen him go absolutely raw. I'm sure we're going to talk about some of those movies here on both of our lists, where he's just brave. I think he's a very brave actor, and I'm always excited to see what he's doing next, especially considering the fact that one of these upcoming movies is with Fincher. I mean, doesn't get really much more exciting than that for me personally.
Yeah, I mean, to echo everything you said, Fassbender always gives it his all in any single project that he's in. And I love that he's someone that has tackled so many different genres. I love that he's not an actor that sticks to one specific kind of film. And he works with so many different filmmakers, and he shows these different sides of him that we may not have expected from Fassbender. Like, of course, he's done his fair share of dramas and everything, but he's also done some blockbusters, you know, with the X-Men films and obviously Prometheus, of course, but then he's done super smaller scale projects. He's obviously collaborated with Steve McQueen many times, and he's done some super independent films, and also, like, he's done musicals and comedies and horror movies and action movies and thrillers. And I always get excited whenever I see his name attached to any project, because I always know that he's going to give it his all, even if the movie is truly god awful. And like you brought up, he unfortunately does have a handful of stinkers.
Yeah,
but he's never the problem in any of them, which is always a delight, because you walk out of a film being like, oh man, that was bad, but Michael Fassbender kept that film afloat in some capacity. Yeah, I've loved Fassbender for a long time, and I'm very excited to see him really back in the limelight, because I have missed seeing his beautiful face in movies and everything, and as well as other parts of his body in other movies. But, you know, I get excited every time I see him in a film, and I'm super excited to delve into our favorite films from him. So I just say, without further ado, let's get into our top five favorite films starring Michael Fassbender.
Yeah, man,
so,
let's do it.
Michael, what is your number five favorite Michael Fassbender film of all time?
All right, so my number five, it's strange because my number five, honestly, I would say is probably, quote-unquote, the best film on this list. It's the film I've rated the highest on all the movies I'm going to talk about, but the reason it's lower is solely because of how difficult it is to watch, and it's 12 Years a Slave. I mean, before we even get to the Fassbender element of it all, the ensemble put together in this movie as a whole is insane. Chiwetel Ejiofor, Benedict Cumberbatch, Paul Dano, a lot of very small roles, and I think Steve McQueen handles ensembles very well in movies like Widows and this. You can see him use bit parts in very impactful ways, and sometimes those are the biggest moments of the movie. And in saying that, though, Michael Fassbender definitely has a large role in this movie as this horrible, horrible slave owner. It's probably the most despicable role, in my opinion, that he's played. And it's a very agonizing movie to watch because of how brave those performances are, especially between Chiwetel and Fassbender and Lupita Nyong'o and Fassbender. They go to places that we've seen in other movies, but I think McQueen shoots it in such a way that it captures the realism without glamorizing or sensationalizing any of it, and explores that tragedy in a very unique way, because we're seeing it over 12 years. We're seeing a man who was free be put into this position and kind of go through this hardship, with Michael Fassbender constantly berating him, putting him down, and just giving him giving all these people a constant hell, completely innocent people. But that being said, the performance is masterful. It's a character that is easy to hate on paper, and Fassbender brings it to an entire new level with his performance. So that one I have to give full credit to, despite, like I said, not being a film that I often want to think about or revisit, you know?
Absolutely. I'm going to pass on this. It's a little higher on my list, so I'll be talking about it very, very shortly. So my number five is a film that I have mentioned earlier, and that is X-Men First Class, the first movie that I've seen with Michael Fassbender. So this was kind of a gamble of a film, because at this point, the X-Men franchise was kind of fading out. You know, X-Men 3 was not very beloved by critics or audiences. And then X-Men Origins Wolverine came out, and everyone thought that was the nail in the coffin. But then it was announced that a prequel was coming out, directed by Matthew Vaughn, fresh off of the success of Kick-Ass, and we have James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender playing younger versions of Professor X and Magneto. And again, huge gamble, because everybody loved Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen in those roles. Of course, I mean, they obviously brought those roles to life so beautifully. But then seeing the younger versions of them, and a lot of people were like, really, do we need a prequel? Do we really need an origin story of how the X-Men came to be? Maybe not, but honestly, it's one of the best films in the entire franchise. I think it's an underrated entry in the series. People don't really talk about First Class like the way they really should. I feel like the titles in the X-Men franchise that seem to get the most attention are X2, Days of Future Past, and probably Logan. I would say those are the ones that get the
discussion
and everything. And they're all great in their own ways. I think Logan is still my favorite of the entire X-Men franchise, but this is not far behind. And I really love how all these characters have these layers to them, and you get where all of them are coming from. You don't necessarily root for Magneto this time around, but you kind of sympathize with him, especially when you learn about his backstory and what happened with him when he was a child. And I love Fassbender in this series. He's never been a weak spot, and I have to just address this very, very briefly, even though we're talking about First Class. I know that people like to dog on X-Men Apocalypse. It's not the best. I'll admit it. It's not the greatest movie ever. But one of the best acted scenes in the entire X-Men prequel, sequel, whatever franchise that you want to call it, contains Eric in a forest. And I'm not going to say what happens, but that's one of the best acted scenes that Fassbender has honestly ever done. And it's because at that point, you really start like feeling something for this character, even though he's done a lot of terrible things. And I really love the relationship between the two of them in this film. And I think they work off each other beautifully. I couldn't have pictured anyone but these two actors playing these characters. But I also just think X-Men First Class on its own is a great film. It's a great superhero film. It's a great origin film. But it's also a great film. It's entertaining. It's high octane. It's fast paced and moves along swiftly. The visuals are great. The action sequences are wonderful. The needle drops you hear throughout this movie are really wonderful. It takes place in the 60s. And I love it. I really think that this is a fantastic film. And I knew that I had to put at least one X-Men film on the list, because I couldn't just put more than one. It wouldn't have been fair to the other Fassbender films in his catalog. But this one's great. It's great. It introduced us to it's definitely the film that got mainstream audiences to be aware of who Michael Fassbender was, because I feel like James McAvoy had some notoriety prior to that. He did some period films, and he also did Wanted at that point. So people were aware of James McAvoy, but not many people knew who Michael Fassbender was until this movie came out. And then it came out, and everyone was like, wow, I cannot wait to see whatever else Michael Fassbender does. So X-Men First Class is my number 5. Are you going to pass, or is this not on your list?
This, like, just barely missed my list. This was, like, on the brink of making my list. It was either this or 12 Years a Slave, essentially. I don't want to spoil anything about my list, but I love this movie. That is not to say I don't love this movie. I think it's one of the best X-Men movies, for sure. And I think, like you said, man, that chemistry between McAvoy and Fassbender and all of those prequel movies, even Dark Phoenix, I think is phenomenal. It's what keeps the heart of these movies going. And like you said, it's like Eric is obviously a villainous character, but this movie, First Class, is probably the most human we get to see, the human side of him, and the really like the tragic backstory that he has, fully evolving him into Magneto, I think is a very interesting angle that this movie takes. And you know, it goes to a lot of brave places, especially in like looking back on it. It's not like this like bombastic, like loud movie. Like it really takes its time with the character stuff. And I've always admired that about that film. So yeah, a great film. It just missed my list, sadly.
Yeah, I mean, it's so good. And that whole climactic battle on the beach and everything, yeah, while the missile crisis is going on and everything. And it's a great backdrop for what the time period of this movie is. Like, it's just a film set in the 60s, but then the Cuban Missile Crisis is going on in the backdrop of the movie. And I'm like, oh, that's actually really cool, incorporating some form of history into this film to kind of humanize these characters and forget that they're not forget that they're superheroes. They're people. Yeah, they have these powers and everything, but they're also human and everything, yeah, which I really respect. But going into our number fours, what is your pick?
So this is going to be another Steve McQueen movie. This is going to be Shame. And it's Steve McQueen, I think the only movie of his that I probably like rewatch is Widows, because solely because of how painful these Fassbender-led ones are. I mean, Shame is a movie about someone suffering from severe sex addiction and kind of how his life spirals out of control when his estranged sister comes back into play, played by Carey Mulligan. And I think they both murder this movie. Probably my favorite Carey Mulligan performance to this day still. And I think they don't really tell you a lot about the characters in this movie. Nothing is really laid out clearly as to their backstory, why the trauma that they carry has led them to the places they are now, but it's very clear that there is a lot of abuse and mistreatment of both of them when they were young, and you're kind of just seeing them react to it as adults and react to each other after not having seen each other, having processed things in their adult life in ways that are unhealthy, and now they're thrust back together through this situation. It's a very upsetting film, and this even more so than 12 Years a Slave in a lot of ways, I would really say if you're not like equipped in a mental emotional space to watch a movie like this, I would definitely avoid it. But if you feel like watching something kind of challenging and that will probably get under your skin and show sex in a way that is not glamorous and is not fun, and is almost very disturbing, this is a phenomenal character study and examination of how those traumas in our youth kind of morph us into unrecognizable creatures, you know?
This is another pass for me.
Understandable.
A lot of things to say about this movie. Some things may be like, really, you're going to say it about this? And I'm like, hell yeah, this movie's going to make me fan a lot because, oh my God, some of the stuff that we see in this movie, wow. Yeah. We'll get to that when we get to that for sure. My number four is 12 Years a Slave, which you just talked about. I love this film. It's so fucking good. And you know, like you said, this is a very difficult watch. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen it. I've probably seen it in full, maybe like, oh God, it's been a long time since I've seen this. And I remember when I went into the movie, when it came out, I knew that it was going to be a very tough watch. I knew,
of course,
right then,
yeah,
and there, I knew that this was not going to be something that I was going to be like, I feel so happy and overjoyed when I walk out of this movie. Instead, I'm like, oh, well, I don't even know what to say. It came out in 2013, which is absolutely wild that this movie is 10 years old. That's absolutely nuts.
That's crazy.
It's so crazy to think about how many movies from 2013 that are celebrated came out are now a decade old. They're now 10 years old. It's nuts. But this film is – I love how you brought up that Steve McQueen doesn't necessarily like shove everything in your face to the point where it's like it takes you out of the movie. If anything, it lures you in because you can't take your eyes off screen, yeah, because of what's being shown and what's being depicted and everything. And yeah, you talked about the ensemble. Everyone here gives 110%. Like, everyone here is acting their asses off in this film. Like, Chiwetel Ejiofor, I had never heard of Chiwetel Ejiofor before this movie. I had never seen anything with him before this movie, but I immediately became a fan of him after I saw this film. Incredible work. This was definitely his breakout role.
Yeah.
For sure. Like, this is what definitely got a lot of people to know him. Lupita Nyong'o, this was her first movie, period. And then she won an Oscar for it, and it's one of the best debut performances that I've seen in forever. And then
easily in like the top 10 of all time, I would say. Sorry to interrupt 100%. You, but yeah.
No, you're totally fine, because that's a totally valid statement. Mm-hmm. And then Fassbender, definitely in contention for best performance of his career. It's not my favorite performance that he's given. I wouldn't even consider it his best, but I would not argue with anyone if they did say that this was for the sure. best acting, because he really played Despicable with a capital D, and he played it really, really well. Yeah. And there's certain sequences in the movie where you kind of think to yourself, oh, maybe this guy is not as bad of a guy. There's that sequence where they're walking around the nighttime where it's him and Solomon just talking and everything. I can't remember what it was about because it's been so long since I've seen this, but it's one of the more quieter scenes of the movie. And that's the thing too, that this movie beautifully has moments that are very quiet. There may not be any dialogue. You just look at the characters and just see the reactions on their face, with the music beautifully composed by Hans Zimmer, by the way, underlining what's going on in the film. And then you get these moments that are very loud and explosive and terrifying. The scene in the movie, when that happened, I knew that there was going to be a scene that was going to shake me up. But I did not think it was going to go to the places that it went.
Yeah.
And it's one of the hardest scenes that I've ever watched in any film ever. But for some reason, this movie is something that I've gone back to way more than I probably should. But it's just so engrossing and captivating. And I mean, across the board in every department, it's incredible. And Steve McQueen, something that he is so brilliant with is his usages of very, very, very long takes where the camera doesn't cut. It just stays on what's going on. He moves the camera around. And that scene that I hinted at, that's all one long take. It's like a good, like, what, 7-8 minutes of the camera not cutting away. And it's some of the most brutal visual storytelling that I've honestly have ever seen. And I love it. I really think that this is a masterful achievement. And even though this wasn't my favorite film of that year, I think this is a very deserving Best Picture winner. Absolutely. And it's one that definitely hasn't been as talked about these last few years as it was at one point. But I think if you're going to look back at some of the best Picture winners of the past, I would say 15, 20 years, this is a film that universally, I think a lot of people can agree, that was a deserving Best Picture winner. It may not have been my Best Picture winner, but it was a deserving Best Picture winner, because sometimes when a film wins Best Picture at the Oscars, it either helps boost its status or it taints it.
Yeah.
And we've had some Best Picture titles that have definitely tainted their legacy because of their Best Picture winning status. 12 Years a Slave, thankfully, hasn't had that effect. And it's really, really extraordinary. Steve McQueen is a master storyteller, and this is obviously not the only time that I'll be talking about him, because I did pass on Shane, but I love 12 Years a Slave, and Fassbender is extraordinary in it, and honestly, he should have won the Oscar for it. I don't have anything against the performance that Jared Leto gave in Dallas Buyers Club, but to me, Fassbender was the best acting of the five that were nominated that year for supporting actor. And yeah, it's an incredible film. There's really not much more to say that hasn't been said already these last 10 years.
Unflinching. Wonderful both film. Of those movies,
love it
man.
So much. Unflinching. Just truly terrifying. Moving. Beautiful. Heartbreaking. And the last 10 minutes, oh my God. Oh my God. Literally, oh my God. I'll never stop thinking about them. Just really remarkable stuff. Truly fantastic film.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just to once again further echo both of our thoughts, I mean, I think it's a Best Picture movie that is not only a masterpiece from a filmmaking perspective and a performance perspective, but it's an important movie, and I think that
it is
because of, and I think Shame is too in the same way, where it's like we are not exposed to these subject matters in this realistic way, generally, especially when it comes to media, and I think that it is not easy to consume by any means. I think that's why a lot of filmmakers haven't done it. But I admire Steve McQueen for being brave enough to show these subject matters in such a honest light, the horrors of these situations in our history.
100%. Couldn't agree with you more there. And now going into our number threes, what is your pick for number three?
Yeah, this is, funnily enough, this is probably the movie on both of our lists that has the least amount of Michael Fassbender in it, but he's phenomenal in this movie. And I think this movie honestly is an underrated one from this filmmaker, and that's Haywire. Steven Soderbergh directed it in 2011. Obviously, Gina Carano at this point is not an actress I am a fan of at all. But I do think, though, in this film, they played to her strengths exactly how they should have. At the time, you know, she was fresh off of her MMA career, and she was breaking into film. They put a great ensemble around her: Channing Tatum, Ewan McGregor, Bill Paxton, Antonio Banderas, and obviously Michael Fassbender. And the action in this movie is, as the fight scene that Michael Fassbender and Gina Carano have in the hotel is still probably like in my top five action sequences of all time. And it's not this like flashy, you know, well choreographed thing. It is just brutal, and it is kind of mean, and just once it's done, it's just done. There's no really moment where you're like, ooh, the fight's over. It's just like, oh my God, that like all just happened in a minute and a half. They you know, what the fuck is happening? And I think the movie takes the espionage angle and kind of blends old school espionage type storytelling with new style action. I know a lot of people complain, this is a boring action movie. It takes its time. And I think without it, the film taking its time, you don't care. And I think that's a lot of the problems with a lot of movies nowadays, people complaining about runtimes and stuff like that. This is an extremely short movie, and people were bored by the 90 minutes that it had, you know. I think it takes time, especially in a movie where the stakes are this high, to get you to care. And Steven Soderbergh hasn't really directed a ton of action. Seeing him behind the camera really, once again, just captured extremely visceral, blunt, realistic action in inventive and unique ways made for a very enjoyable movie for me. And it's honestly, even in Soderbergh's filmography now, having seen most of his stuff, this is one that I revisit probably the most, even over Oceans, I would say, which is kind of crazy. But I've always loved this movie. And when, once again, I think Michael Fassbender, this was kind of the test drive for him to maybe be James Bond, bro. Like, when I look back on this movie and see his role in it, it's like, oh my goodness, what a giant missed opportunity that was. He dresses like him in this, like he's a spy. It just, the look, it suits him. The vibe, it suits him. And I don't want to spoil this movie for anyone. It's got a lot of twists and turns. You're looking for an action movie with some twisties and some turnies, a little bit more of a story than you're probably used to in a flick like this, I definitely recommend checking it out.
So many years ago, when you told me about your love for this movie, I said, I'll definitely watch it and everything. Well, fast forward 3 years later, and Brian still hasn't seen
this
movie.
That's okay, man. Most people haven't. I don't blame you. I feel like it's an underrated gem for sure.
And it's crazy. I am a fan of Soderbergh. I do like him a lot. And I love that he's a filmmaker that does not stick to one
I mean, totally, fucker, yeah, out of left field constantly.
He goes from doing something like The Laundromat to doing Laundromat was terrible. What was the Let Them All Talk, that Meryl Streep on a cruise movie, and then he did No Sudden Move, and then he did Kimmy, and then he went back to doing Magic Mike with the third Magic Mike. So he's a guy that does practically everything, which I really respect about him. Yeah. He can do action movies, comedies, thrillers.
And he does it well. And
he does it well. He does it absolutely. And he incorporates something new for each single film that he does, which absolutely, I really respect. I definitely need him to bounce back because I hated Magic Mike's Last Dance. I still haven't seen that
because people were bummed about it. Yeah.
So disappointed, but I know he'll bounce back very soon.
Yeah.
And yeah, it sounds like a really good film, and you brought up Ewan McGregor, and I fucking love
Ewan
McGregor.
If we were doing an Ewan McGregor list, this movie might be higher. This is one of my favorite Ewan McGregor performances that not enough people talk about.
He's great, and you know, I hope one day he gets his due diligence and
yeah, man, he's in the same boat,
Academy Award, and I need people to stop just looking at him as Obi-Wan, and I know people don't just look at him as Obi-Wan, but there are still too many people that are like, oh, he's Obi-Wan, and I'm like,
exactly,
no, he's Renton from Trainspotting, you dummy.
Come on, like, guys. Yeah, I think the thing
is Edward Bloom for Big Fish,
don't you know? Yeah, that's the thing, though, with Haywire. It's like, I think, obviously, like, the Gina Carano element of it all has definitely soured people on probably checking it out in the past couple years, which is listen, beyond understandable. I am in no way defending her actions or anything at all, her words. Mm-hmm. I disagree with them entirely. But yeah, please, you know, if you are comfortable with checking out a movie where she is the lead, this is probably like her maybe one of one good performances that she's given. So, you know.
Honestly, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Because she was not very good in Fast and Furious. She was not very good in Deadpool.
Nope.
She was in Deadpool, right?
Yeah, that was her.
Okay. I wasn't sure if that was her or someone else. And then, oh God, what show? The Mandalorian.
Wasn't
super high on her in that show. But we're not here to talk about Gina.
No, definitely not.
Talk about Michael Fassbender. Yeah. So obviously this film is not on my list, but I definitely will be checking it out very soon for
awesome.
Sure. It's been on my watch list for a long time, and hopefully it gets removed from the watch list and is actually logged in on my Letterboxd.
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, man. Soon. I'd love to hear your thoughts
absolutely.
On it.
Absolutely. So my number three is Steve Jobs, which in my humble opinion, he should have won his first Oscar for this. Besides 12 Years a Slave, I could kind of understand him not winning the Oscar for that. This, on the other hand, this was the Michael Fassbender show from start to finish. He was in pretty much every single scene of this movie. And he should have won an Oscar for this. If we're talking strictly on the films that he was nominated for, he should have absolutely won for this.
Yeah.
So Steve Jobs is so fascinating to me because it's a biographical drama, but it doesn't go from cradle to grave. It doesn't take that approach with this film. We don't get to see Steve Jobs as a child until he dies and everything. We instead get three portions of his life. And it's focused solely on these product launches that he's involved with, the Mac, the Nex, and then the iMac. And I love what Danny Boyle and Aaron Sorkin do with this film. They literally do the three-act structure with this film. But also, I have to give so much credit to Danny Boyle because something that he decided to do, as well as his cinematographer, they shot each act on a different piece of film. He shot the first part on 16mm, then he did 35mm, and then he shot the last part digitally. And it just showed the progression of, you know, film and everything, which I thought was really, really impressive. I thought that was a really cool approach to the film. And some of Aaron Sorkin's best dialogue is here in this film. And it's kind of criminal that this script wasn't even nominated for the Oscar, because quite frankly, it could have won the Oscar had it been nominated. And what I love so much about this film is that it basically shuts people up by saying, we don't need to cast an actor that looks like the subject that the actor is playing. If the actor gives a great performance, that's all that matters. Does Michael Fassbender look anything like Steve Jobs? He absolutely does not. Does he sound anything like Steve Jobs? Absolutely not. You look at him and you see Michael Fassbender and he sounds like Michael Fassbender. Okay, whatever. But his acting is on a whole other level. He is fantastic in this film. And the thing that I think that helps boost his acting here is the cast that surrounds him. He acts one-on-one with all these actors throughout certain portions of the film, and they all are somehow on the same level as him. Jeff Daniels is incredible in this, especially in that second act where Jeff Daniels is given a lot more to do. And then Seth Rogen shot, I think, everybody. I think he gives one of the best performances of his career as Wozniak. And I remember when that casting was announced, people were like, Seth Rogen in a Danny Boyle movie as Steve Wozniak? That's not going to be a good casting. And yes, it did take me a little while to push aside that that's Seth Rogen and he did all these stoner comedies and everything. But I always say this about anyone. If you're given a good script and you work with a great director, you're going to get a great performance out of said actor. And that's how I felt when Spielberg worked with Seth Rogen a few years later on The Fablemans. You could say what you want about The Fablemans, but I think Seth Rogen's performance in that was really fantastic because it was so out of the norm for him. But he also gave a genuinely great performance in that film because he had the opportunity to work under the direction of someone like Spielberg. And with this film, Danny Boyle finds a way of getting great performances out of all of his actors. But as much as this is the Fassbender show, and it certainly is, I think the true MVP of this film is Kate Winslet. I think she is insanely good here. And the Polish accent that she does here is truly impeccable. The queen of accents is Kate Winslet. I just want to address that right now. But she and Fassbender, especially, their chemistry is off the charts. They're incredible together. And there's that whole sequence in the third act where she talks about trying to fix things with Steve's daughter and everything. She's like moving all the papers around and throwing them across the room and everything. He's just so befuddled by what's going on. But this film is extraordinary. And you want to talk about a film that flies by?
Definitely.
The fucking movie is like, it starts, then it's like over in what feels like 20 minutes. This is one of the fastest movies I've ever seen in my life. And Danny Boyle is not someone who generally makes fast-paced films. Like, not that his films are slow, but he's definitely not known to be the fast-paced director that we have out there. And this is probably, alongside Trainspotting, probably the fastest-paced film of his entire catalog. And then, I mean, Aaron Sorkin, same goes for him. His writing is so snappy and movie that it just goes so quickly, and it's so high in adrenaline, and it's so beautifully done. And yeah, Fassbender, like, you're not supposed to be rooting for Steve Jobs, but you could see so much human side in him in the film, which I really respect, because we had that Ashton Kutcher biopic that came out a few years before. And Ashton Kutcher, while he looked a lot like Steve Jobs, absolutely, I mean, it was a very uncanny resemblance to him. And he was good in the movie, but that was not the Steve Jobs movie that I would have wanted. And I'm glad that Danny Boyle stepped in and Aaron Sorkin stepped in to create this film. David Fincher at one point was actually supposed to direct this.
Yeah, could you imagine?
But this was before Michael Fassbender was attached to play Steve Jobs, because originally it was supposed to be Christian Bale, who I absolutely could have seen in the role. I think he would have done a great job, of course. But now, after having seen the movie and it being almost 10 years since this has come out, I can't really picture anyone else in the role but Fassbender, which is saying a lot, because again, he doesn't look anything like Steve Jobs, but it's so extraordinary. And one of my favorite moments of the past 10 years, echoing back to what I brought up in the second act, where he and Jeff Daniels, him and John Scully, had that whole confrontation in the hallway. One of my favorite line deliveries of the past 10 years comes from this scene. John Scully literally says, "You're going to end me, aren't you?" And then Steve responds with, "You're being ridiculous. I'm going to sit center court and watch you do it yourself." And I'm like, I'm like, right in 101 right there. Like, Sorkin, you fucking genius. It's a shame that Sorkin's gone down a little bit as soon as he started stepping behind the camera to direct. I think he's better when he's writing, personally. But yeah, Steve Jobs is extraordinary. It's incredible. And it's so criminal that this is a film that isn't even talked about to the levels that it should have been. This should have been the biggest Oscar player probably of that year. It should have been one of them, at least. And the fact that it only got 2 nominations for Fassbender and Winslet is so sickening, because this should have been a picture, director, screenplay especially. That's the biggest – I don't like to use the word snub, but that was a major, major, major snub considering what ended up winning screenplay that year. It's kind of sickening how this didn't even get nominated for anything besides that. And nobody saw this movie, too.
Yeah.
This movie tainted the box office. I remember there was that period in 2015 where movie theaters were not doing very well. Like, a lot of movies were making like under $10 million opening weekend, which was really bad. And this is a film that should have done a lot better. I'm glad that it has somewhat of a following in the film cinephile community, but it's extraordinary. It's great. I love it so much, and I could talk about it forever. It really is a wonderful film, and I'm so curious to hear if it's on your list. So are you going to pass, or is it not on your list?
You know, it's crazy, because right when you said the name of the movie, I was kicking myself, because this should have been and probably would have been on my list. It just completely slipped my mind, and I'm devastated right now.
Oh, my God.
Because I adore this movie. I literally, as we were talking about, I looked back on my Letterboxd to verify this. When I had first seen this movie a couple years ago, I watched it again the next day. That's how much I liked it, which is rare. And you brought up an excellent point. The movie flies by so fast. It's unbelievable. And that three-act structure lends itself so well to how fast-paced it is. And then you bring up the Jeff Daniels element of it all. There are many sequences in that second act, especially in like a flashback sequence within that is like harrowing levels of dialogue that are just so sharp and so good. And you're absolutely right, Sorkin killed it. And Danny Boyle, he still found a way to infuse his Boyleisms in this movie, his weird little visual touches. They'll throw stuff on the walls sometimes or on the ceilings, and it's like, The movie didn't need to have any sauce like that, for lack of a better term, because the writing was already so strong. The performances were already so strong. And yet, in a lot of other movies, when you see directors try and infuse some weird visual touch into it, it takes you out of it, especially with how realistic this movie is. But it's just subtle enough that it works, and it blends in with everything going on around it. Kate Winslet, like you said, is phenomenal, as is Seth Rogen. Yeah, I'm pissed. I'm honestly pissed at myself that I didn't put this on my list. I love this movie.
Oh man, it's so good. Yeah. It's so good. And really, he should have won the Oscar. And so should have Kate Winslet, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I think back all the time. I think everyone thinks about it. And since it's so fresh, too, considering that he has a new movie coming out, did Leonardo DiCaprio really deserve the Oscar for The Revenant? It's a good performance, but was that the film that we should have awarded Leo his first Oscar for? Absolutely not. And would I have given it an Oscar? Probably not. A nomination, sure, but a win over... I'm sorry, when Michael Fassbender did Steve Jobs, to me personally, was
much better.
Yes, Michael Fassbender didn't risk his life making Steve Jobs. Okay, I'll give him that. But he didn't like sleep in a bear or whatever to do whatever and then survive the icy cold weather. I commend Leo for going to the places that he went. But when you look back at some of the other performances that Leo has done, that's not exactly the film that we should have awarded his first Oscar for. And hopefully, whenever Leo wins his second Oscar, it's going to be for the performance and not for his career being like, oh, we need to give you a second Oscar. Here you go.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. Leo, and this is not a Leo episode, but yeah, definitely a couple other movies in his filmography that I would go to first to give him a nom or an award for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now going into our top two, this is going to be very, very, very interesting. There is a film that I passed on already, but you have not passed on any of the films that I've talked about. So I'm so genuinely curious to hear what your top two films are. So let's get into finding out what your second favorite Michael Fassbender film of all time is.
Right on. Well, number two is a widely underseen movie. In my opinion, a wildly underappreciated movie, Song to Song, directed by Terrence Malick from 2017. This is one of those movies that it's amazing. When you look at the Letterboxd like chart for this movie, you get the fives, and you get a lot of ones, and there are very few like in the middle. You know, it's one of those weird bar graphs. And I think that, I mean, it's a Malick movie, so if you haven't seen a Malick movie, it's very experimental, very funky. There's not really a lot of dialogue. A lot of it is told through narration and visuals, and it's the story between Ryan Gosling and Rooney Mara. They're both in the music biz. They fall in love, and it's not really a love triangle per se, but Michael Fassbender is kind of the wrench in their relationship, and it dives into him wrenching in their relationship and also his relationship with Natalie Portman, who does a phenomenal job in this movie as well. And I would say, honestly, this film might be my favorite Fassbender performance. It is a very interesting character because he's extremely unlikable. You could tell he's a bastard from like moment one he's in this movie, and he's very swarmy and just gross to be around. But it's a character. He's a character that knows he's a bastard, and he hates the fact that he's a bastard. And you hear him inner monologuing about this strife as he's doing like very questionable things a lot of the time. So once again, a brave performance. I know you're going to talk about Shame at some point here as well, and he goes to places in this movie that are quite shocking and intense, with his physical performance, at least, that I commend him very much for. And it's a movie that a lot of those little blurbs in those narrations have stuck with me. It's that Malick thing where some of his movies like I can't stand, some of his movies I love, and for whatever reason, the poetry of the narration in this movie definitely spoke to me. Perhaps it's my love of music, perhaps it's my love of these actors being in this movie. But I just feel like it flows so well. Those 2 hours just kind of flow by super fast. It's very well paced. And even, I mean, you can even get a little Val Kilmer performance in there that is super underseen, and he's great in this as like this crazy rock star. It's a movie I would implore everyone to try watching. It's not unlike most of these films, it's not one that I guarantee that you like or love. It is a movie that could annoy you, and it did annoy me the first time too, and I think that's part of its design, honestly, is just to overwhelm you and then understimulate you and then throw it back in your face again. Very interesting movie. I've seen it 4 times, and even talking about it now, I'm ready to watch it again. I wish I could have seen this one in theaters, but yeah, I know I don't think you've seen this, but I would love to eventually know your thoughts on it if you do.
Yeah, this is one I haven't seen. I've slowly kind of been warming up to Malick. I think the last time when we did this on the previous incarnation of the podcast, you had this film in your, I believe, in the same spot, in number 2.
I think so, yeah.
And I remember just seeing you glow about it and everything, which is so rare because I'm sure there are fans of this movie out there, but to the common Terrence Malick fan, yeah, they're not very high on this movie.
I would dare say, like, this and Knight of Cups were probably like the two movies of his that most Malick fans also don't care for. Yeah.
Yeah. Knight of Cups, you don't really hear anybody talk about, yeah, really at all. When people talk about Malick, they talk about Tree of Life and Days of Heaven and The Thin Red Line, mm-hmm, and Badlands.
Yeah.
And since we did that recording 3 years ago, I have been slowly warming up to Malick. I've been slowly making my way through his filmography. I loved Badlands. That's definitely his most straightforward film.
Absolutely.
I would say, like,
that's
definitely a film that really anybody can like. Like, you could watch it and be like, oh, okay, it's a pretty straightforward narrative. There's nothing complicated to it. It's not necessarily visual poetry or what have you. But I saw that. I saw The New World, which was his take on the Pocahontas story, which I was very surprised by how much I liked that one.
I still
one.
Need to check that out.
I was very surprised by how much I liked that one. I really liked A Hidden Life, which was his most recent film.
Yeah.
I went into that with very low expectations and walked out of it absolutely floored. Probably because, like, I'm a guy that loves films set during World War II and everything, and that's a true story, that movie. So just following that story and knowing that that actually went down, it really hit home for me and everything. It left a bigger impact on me than I was anticipating.
Yeah.
And I have to watch The Tree of Life again. I saw that at a time where I don't think I was as appreciative of film as I am now.
Sure, I get that.
So I have to put myself in the right headspace. Thin Red Line, I haven't seen. Days of Heaven, I've been dying to watch. I've been dying to check that one out. This one I do want to watch. To the Wonder, I've had zero interest in watching that.
Yeah, no one ever talks about To the Wonder.
it looked boring. It sounded boring. And I love Ben Affleck, but I just can't. And then Knight of Cups, yeah, no one really talks about that. And Terrence Malick shot a film like right before the lockdown happened, and it still hasn't come out. And that's the thing with this fucking guy. He shoots a movie, then it comes out like 7 years after it's shot.
Yeah.
So you look at, like, with Song the Song, for example, they shot that in 2011. I was looking this up as you were talking about it. They shot it in 2011.
Yep.
So this was around the time that Michael Fassbender had Shame come out, X-Men First Class, and he obviously looks a bit thinner there. But then you look at him in the year that the movie came out, and you're like, huh, that looks nothing like Michael Fassbender now. So obviously time has gone by and everything. But no, I do love those actors. And the idea of having Fassbender and Gosling and Rooney Mara work together, I'm like, that's a great
I'll say
pairing.
This too. Like, the scenes with Natalie Portman and Fassbender are probably the most dialogue-heavy scenes in the movie. Their chemistry is amazing. They're
another great pairing.
Yeah,
I
unexpected
wish that they
pairing.
Would do something together again.
Yeah, and you could, and I think that before we get off this movie fully, I think that examination of their relationship is probably the best part of this movie. She is a very wholesome, sweet woman sucked into his whirlwind of a life and just trying to keep up, you know. And
yeah,
and the movie's complicated. It asks you complicated questions about love and life and, you know, what is really wrong and right when you're just trying to exist, you know.
Well, I ask myself those questions
there
every single
go.
Day. So it sounds like my kind of movie. I will definitely check that.
Yes.
I've been wanting to check it out for a long time, and I definitely do want to give it the benefit of the doubt. And maybe I'll click with it. We'll have to see.
Yeah, man.
We never know.
Or you could be the rare case where it's like, that was just fine, which would be awesome.
You know, I went into Badlands ready to hate it. And then I watched it, and I was like, wow, this is great.
Yeah, Badlands is great.
So, you know, we'll have to see where I stand with that. So my number two is Shame.
Awesome.
Which you talked about a few minutes ago and everything. Oh, my God. This, to me, this is the best acting that Fassbender has ever done, in my opinion. Now, earlier I brought up how with Steve Jobs, he should have won his first Oscar for that. But really, I meant that he should have won his second Oscar for that because sure. Michael Fassbender should have not only been nominated for Best Actor for this movie, but the guy should have walked away with the Oscar because this is an incredible performance. It's the best acting that he's ever done, in my opinion. I don't think he's ever been better, and I don't know if he'll ever be better. Mm. And that's tough to say. I'm sure that maybe within the next 5 years, maybe he could pump out a performance that somehow tops the work that he did in Shame. But yeah, it's so extraordinary. And again, similar to 12 Years a Slave, this is an incredibly difficult film to watch. You brought up how his character is a severe sex addict. And he's someone that loves having sex, but you could also tell that he's trying so hard to fight this battle.
Yeah.
And he's trying to step away from being a sex addict. And then there's a portion in the film where you think that now he's trying to live a normal life and have a relationship with this person. Yeah, they engage in sex and everything, but he's not as, like, into it as he was prior and everything. But it's a beautiful character study, and I agree with what you said. When Carey Mulligan, who, by the way, is incredible in this, she's fantastic. As much credit as Fassbender deserves, Carey Mulligan deserves an equal amount of credit, given one of her best performances in this film.
Yeah.
As soon as she steps into the picture, I mean, it's such a drastic shift for his character and everything that's going on around him. And I really just love how Steve McQueen presents this film and how it's paced and everything. It takes its time. It's very quiet and everything. It doesn't focus so much on the sex scenes and everything, which that's the reason why this movie received the big and very rare NC-17 rating, which probably did affect its chances of being nominated for Oscars.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, which kind of rubs me a bit the wrong way, because last year Blonde, which was also an NC-17 movie, Ana de Armas got nominated for that. And I know that the Academy was different 10 years ago compared to how it is
true.
Now.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate that if that performance could get nominated, Michael Fassbender just absolutely should have been recognized, because it really was one of the best performances of that entire year. And no disrespect to John Desjardins, who ended up winning the Oscar that year for The Artist. He was great, but how many people are even talking about The Artist anymore? And I mean, granted, Shame's not exactly the most talked about film in the world either, but it's definitely a film that has a lot of fans because of how beautifully written it is and how it's directed and acted. I mean, the acting here is extraordinary, but also Steve McQueen. I mean, this guy, I think, even though he's directed a Best Picture winner, I think he's one of the most underrated voices that we have working today. He hasn't done as much work these last few years and everything, but, like, you look at Hunger, which was great, this, which was great, 12 Years, obviously, we talked about. Widows is a criminally underrated film.
Yeah.
It's criminally underrated, and then he did that Lovers Rocks, or not, Small Axe series for Amazon, yeah, where he did five films compiled into one, and he just did a documentary called Occupied City, which I've been hearing nothing but great things about. And he's working with Saoirse Ronan on the film set in World War II, which is – that's an awesome pairing. I just think that this story is just so beautiful and moving and devastating and heartbreaking. And it's really hard to watch too, especially in the last – I would say the last 20 minutes. There's this particular scene where it's him – having sex with multiple people, and it's just showing the passage of time and how, like, you could tell, like, just looking on his face that he's over this and he just wants to fight, but he's struggling. And you know, that's the thing with stories about addicts, they're trying to get themselves better, but some of them have a harder time of cleaning themselves up than others. And usually whenever we get films about addiction, it's usually about alcohol or drug addiction. But the fact that we got a movie about a sex addict, it's something that we're not used to seeing. And there have been some movies that I think we have gotten about sex addiction, but they have been used in a more comedic approach. But this is probably the most realistic depiction of sex addiction that I've ever seen on screen. And I'm sure you could agree with me.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's it's really wonderful. And you know, again, with Steve McQueen launch shots, there's that incredible launch shot where it's just Fassbender running and jogging, and then he finally just breaks down and lets it all out. And one scene that I really need to shout out is when I was watching this for the first time a few years back, I'm just sitting on my couch watching this, and then literally my heart just, like, soared in the air when it just had Carey Mulligan saying, New York, New York. I was like, oh, my God, so many feelings. Steve McQueen, stop. You better stop it right now. Stop it.
Oh, yeah. He's bringing the house down, man.
He really is. He's one of the best filmmakers working, and it's so sad that he hasn't been as active with working as he used to be. But I also love that he's a filmmaker that takes his time with everything that he pumps out. He is very patient. He doesn't release a film every year. He takes his time, which I really respect about any filmmaker. But Shame is a masterclass across the board with the performance, the directing, the writing, the music, the imagery, everything. Sean Babbitt, his imagery is so sublime here. He's collaborated with Steve McQueen, I think, on almost everything that he's directed so far. And yeah, I love Shame. It's obviously a film that I can't rewatch over and over again. Every couple of years I could pop this on, which is saying a lot because, again, the subject matter is so grueling and difficult to process. But I adore Shame. It contains Fassbender's best performance that I personally have ever seen. And yeah, I cannot say anything else about this movie other than I think it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, man. Like I talked about earlier, just like a super uncomfortable, like, character study. And you feel really horrible, like, the whole time. Like, it is constantly.
You really do.
Constantly, like, this oppressive feeling. I think that's the thing with Hunger, this movie, and 12 Years a Slave specifically, is that there is this overbearing feeling of dread throughout, like, 95% of all three of those movies that is, like, unshakable. And a lot of that comes from, one, Michael Fassbender's performance, and then, two, Steve McQueen's direction. And it's a phenomenal movie.
100%. So now we get to our number ones.
Yeah, man, here we go.
I have no idea what you're going to put as your number one. I have no idea what you're going to pick as your number one. I'm so, so curious. So what is your favorite Michael Fassbender film of all time?
Yeah, man, I don't want to bury the lead anymore. We got to talk about it. It's not The Counselor. It's not The Snowman. It's not Assassin's Creed. It's X-Men Days of Future Past. All right. And first of all, Bryan Singer can rot. He could go fuck himself, obviously, but beyond that, I think that this movie manages to do something that superhero movies and blockbuster movies have been trying to accomplish, especially these last 5 years, in bringing back old characters alongside new characters and making it a movie that is more than just nostalgia bait. Okay, and I think this is the first and probably, like, maybe the only, like, at least when I'm trying to think about it right now, that at no point did this movie feel like nostalgia bait. Through every rewatch, it feels like these characters should be here. They're it's not that, you know, they're just coming in to do a 5-minute scene. Some of them are only in it for 5 minutes, but it feels vital to the world that they're setting up in this movie. And it's the bridge point between that old X-Men trilogy and First Class, and kind of it all finally coming together. And as a lifelong X-Men fan, I mean, seeing both Professor X's have a conversation in a movie, it was and still is one of my favorite comic book movie moments of all time. And to get to the man himself, I mean, I think Fassbender in this movie is so scary. Like, he really is on, like, a warpath. Like, he's tired of this shit. And you could see Eric is just over it. He's tired of being in prison, and he's ready to break out and unleash chaos, essentially. And it's a fun movie. It's an emotional movie led by three great performances: Jennifer Lawrence, Michael Fassbender, and James McAvoy, and Hugh Jackman, how could I forget, as well. Absolutely giving their best to a movie that probably should never have been able to turn out this good. And I dare I say, if it came out now, it probably wouldn't be. I think the culture around these kinds of movies has changed so much, and revisiting this one a ton, it's insane to see that they only got this kind of thing right once, and it's never really been able to do it again. Like, we see movies like The Flash, and less so with Spider-Man No Way Home, which was a movie that I did enjoy, but still, I think that there are those elements when you watch those movies that you kind of can't look past how those companies and those people behind these movies are trying to make you feel something. They want you to clap. They want you to cry. They want you to emote, you know? And Days of Future Past lets it breathe, man. It's something that we've been talking about with all these movies, and I don't think it's any mistake that all these movies we talked about were in that decade that we started this conversation about, man, where movies just had time to breathe, even superhero movies. And this movie, my favorite scene in this movie is just a conversation between Professor X and Magneto on a plane, and it's amazing. And it's not this giant bombastic battle. It never had to be, you know. And I think that's the best thing about these prequel X-Men movies. All four of them, despite the highs and the lows of them, I think the slow character moments in these movies, led by these great actors, bring out something that we don't see in many superhero flicks. And I wish we did, because trust me, everybody, I'm an Avengers guy. I'm an X-Men guy. I love Batman. We just haven't had a lot of good media of them, you know, sadly. And I think that this, especially recent years, I should specify, but I think this movie still stands the test of time. Every time I revisit it, it still hits exactly the same way, man.
We were supposed to protect them.
You abandoned me. You abandoned us all.
Oh, my God. Oh, so good. Yeah, X-Men Days of Future Past is so fucking good.
Yeah, man.
It's so fucking good. And arguably, I would say that this is better than First Class. The only reason why I didn't put this on the list and I put First Class instead is because it has a bit of a more sentimental attachment to me.
Totally.
Because that's the movie that introduced me to Michael Fassbender.
I get it, bro. Same. Yeah.
And, but Days of Future Past, one of the best superhero, top 10 superhero films ever made, I think. Yeah, I agree. Bryan Singer could go fuck off, and I would be very happy if we never hear from him again.
Absolutely.
But this film really is incredible, and I'm not going to push aside how incredible this film is. And this also, similar to the First Class, was a huge fucking gamble. It combined this new cast that we were introduced, but it also combined that with the cast that we have been introduced to and we grew up to love, with Hugh Jackman and Halle Berry and Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen and everything. And just seeing everyone together was great. And I agree with you 100%. This did not feel like nostalgic bait in the sense everyone had a purpose of being there, and it felt well-earned, and it's great. It's so good. It's been so long since I've seen Days of Future Past.
You gotta rewatch
it, man. I remember going to see it when it came out, and I remember just how excited everyone was for it. And I just remember all the acclaim that it got as well. I was genuinely shocked by how much acclaim that this film got, not only as a superhero film, but just as a film, period. I was shocked that everybody was celebrating this as one of the best films of that year. And rightfully so. That was a year where we had not only one, but we had multiple great comic book movies that came out that year. We had The Winter Soldier.
Yep.
We had the first Guardians of the Galaxy. And we had this. And, I mean, if you want to count this, too, we also had Big Hero 6.
Yep.
So we had a good run of superhero films that year. And it's really wonderful. I agree that plane sequence is one of the best scenes of the film. It's definitely up there for one of my favorite scenes of that particular film.
Yeah.
And you know, everything's great, and I just think Fassbender working off everybody is really, really wonderful. And yeah, I love the movie. I really, really love it. And God, McAvoy in that film
so
is on a whole other
good,
level,
man.
As
yeah.
well, so good. And man, he rocks that long hair really.
Absolutely.
He always looks, honestly, even with the bald head, he kind
of
looks good with
he's
that
he's a stunner
joke. So yeah, Days of Future Past is a wonderful, wonderful film.
Yeah, man.
Absolutely.
And the last thing I want to say about it, too, is
watch
this movie and watch either Doctor Strange or Spider-Man back-to-back with it, and notice something, that there's no pause for applause during Days of Future Past when a character shows up.
I agree. And this has come from a guy who has a very soft spot for Spider-Man No Way
As do I. As so. Do I. Do not get me wrong. That movie made me bawl in the theater, bro. I was crying.
Oh, it made me. It made me bawl.
But
as
I.
Well.
But I also and have to be honest with myself and
agree.
Acknowledge
no,
what
I
it is. Yeah.
I agree. I agree. This was at the point where superhero films, there wasn't like 20 of them a year.
Yeah.
Now we're at the point where there's like 20 of them a year, and then 20 TV shows, and everything has to tie together. It's like, can we just agree that the best comic book movie of the past like 3 years was Matt Reeves' The Batman?
Absolutely.
Didn't have to connect to anything.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree.
It was its
agree.
Own thing, and it was great. There was no pause for anything, and like, yes, it was long as fuck, but I could have watched another hour.
As yep, same.
It was just that good. But yeah, Days of Future Past, great number one. And it's so crazy that your number one is a film from 2014, because my number one is also a film from 2014. Now, when people talk about Michael Fassbender, unfortunately, and for some reason, and I'll never understand why, nobody talks about this film, which, again,
I know exactly
I don't
what movie you're
going to
say
why.
Now. Yeah.
You know exactly. You know me well at this point. But yeah, it's so crazy to me that when this movie came out, and people heard that Michael Fassbender was in it, people were like, Michael Fassbender, the guy from like Shame and 12 Years a Slave, he's in this movie? And then people were like, hell yeah, he's in it. Then we see this different side of him that we had not seen before.
Yeah.
We saw the introduction of a side of Fassbender that I hold near and dear to my heart, and that's comedic Michael Fassbender. So my favorite Michael Fassbender film of all time is Frank from 2014, directed by Lenny Abrahamson. I think that this film is maybe one of the most underrated movies I have ever seen in my life. It's a very well-received movie. Critically, it did very, very well, and there are fans for this movie. But unfortunately, when people do talk about Michael Fassbender, this is not one of the first films that come up when talking about Michael Fassbender. Now, granted, you don't really get his face in the movie at all, so I understand that from that perspective, but compared to a lot of the films that we talked about today, of how they're very depressing and Fassbender plays incredibly despicable and vile characters, the character of Frank is the complete 180. He is an absolute sweetheart. He is so loving, and he just wants to have the time of his life, bringing this music to life that he and his group bring to life. And you know what? It's a great road trip movie as well. You know, it's these guys coming from Ireland, and then they go all the way to America to try to perform at South by Southwest, which I think is – that's a cool premise.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing about Frank that is very unique is that he wears this big papier-mâché head. He wears this head that, like, hides his face from everybody. And there's all these frequent jokes throughout the film where it's like, how does he eat? And he showers with it and everything. And then he does the grin on his face, happy face, sad face, what have you. I think the reason why this is my number one is because, again, it's not the best film that he's ever done by any stretch of the imagination, but I think it's cool that he did a film like this, because we saw this side of him that we really haven't seen that much lately. I mean, we're about to get a comedic Fassbender film again in Next Goal Wins, but this film is also a great example, and this is something that I think is very hard to pull off very well, blending comedy and drama.
Yeah, it gets
film.
Dark, bro. This movie goes dark
and,
for
and
sure.
And that's the thing. You watch the movie and you feel like you have an idea of where it goes, because for most of the movie, it's a pretty uplifting film. There are some sad things that happen throughout, but it isn't until the last 20-25 minutes where this film really gets dark. And I know that that could throw some people off. Some people may find that to be a very jarring shift. However, for me, I was engrossed the entire time. I was like, I did not expect this to happen. I didn't expect the film to go down this rabbit hole. And we saw this side of Frank that we hadn't seen at all for the prior 70 to 80 minutes of this movie. And then the last 20 minutes, we see the side of him that I was not expecting when the first frame of this movie started, when we were first introduced to this character. But the entire film, from start to finish, is incredibly entertaining. Fassbender is really wonderful here. You could say that his singing voice isn't the best. It's not perfect, but I love seeing this different side of him. And I hope that one day he gets to do a movie musical, because I think he has the chops to be in the movie musical. Yeah. Maybe he doesn't have the most Broadway voice out there, but I feel like in the years that have passed by, maybe he could have bettered himself as a senior. And I love it. I really genuinely love what he brings to this film. But I also love the cast that surrounds him. Domhnall Gleeson, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Scoot McNairy. Very good ensemble. And the musical numbers are really wonderful. There's not too many of them throughout this film. But the moments where we do get these guys just writing music and performing it and everything are so, so great and everything. Especially the sequence where he's like, I just came up with the greatest song ever. That's like a short little song and everything. And it's not the greatest song ever. And she's like, this is what you deem the greatest song ever? Yeah, people will love it. Just the sarcastic, dry tone that Maggie Gyllenhaal brings to that particular moment is so great. I love the movie, Frank, so much. And the ending, too. I mean, we kind of have been hinting upon how it's a very – it's not exactly the most uplifting ending, but it's a beautiful way of wrapping up these characters' arcs. And that last sequence in the bar where he's saying, I love you all. Oh my God, literal tears every single time I watch this movie. It's criminal how this movie isn't talked about as much as it should be. And it's strange too, because I feel like it's a pretty accessible film. I feel like it's a film that really anyone can enjoy. Like, yes, it's very quirky and some of the comedy is very dry. And I know that sometimes dry comedy flies over people's heads and isn't their kind of humor and everything. But, and I'm not a guy that loves a lot of dry humor either. It's very hit or miss for me. But somehow the comedy here really, really works. And a lot of it is because of Fassbender's delivery of the comedy. He is great in this movie. Even though we don't really see his face, he gives one of my favorite performances of his entire career here. And it made me appreciate the side of him that I hadn't seen. And a side that we really haven't seen much of since. Michael Fassbender showed in this movie that he is not just a guy that could play these villainous roles or do these period pieces or do these dramas or action movies. He could do comedy when given the right material, and he knocked it out of the park in this film. And it's a film that needs to have a more devoted following. It really needs to get a lot more recognition. And it's so crazy, too, that after this movie, Lenny Abrahamson went on to direct Room, and you would have never guessed in a million years that Room was directed by the guy who made Frank. You would have never guessed that in a million years. Just comes to show that when directors direct different things, sometimes it's a win and sometimes it's a loss. But thankfully, Lenny Abrahamson directed two great films back-to-back. Frank is my favorite Michael Fassbender film of all time. I know that it's not your typical number one pick, but every once in a while, I love to catch the listeners, you people listening off guard, by not picking a cliche number one. I don't even think Days of Future Past is a cliche number one for Fassbender either. But Frank, I mean, everyone knows what X-Men Days of Future Past is. Frank, but I bet you some people that are listening to this, I feel like a lot of people that listen to this and are going to be like, when is Frank?
Yeah,
and then they watch it, and they're gonna be like, "Oh my God, this is great! Brian was correct. Yeah, you're damn right, I was correct." So Frank is my number one. Obviously, this not being on your list, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the film Frank.
It's funny because I've only seen this movie twice, but the second that you mentioned the ending, I could literally sing the song. I love you. Oh, like I remember that scene, bro. Like I remember how I felt watching that scene.
ever dread. It's nice to see you. It's really nice to be here. It's so good.
So good. And you're right, dude. I mean, the element of him wearing the mask only further proves how great of a physical performer he is.
Oh my God. And then when the jumping around and the moving and everything insane. That he does, I'm like, where is this side effect?
And you would never imagine that it would be him. Like, I almost wish that they didn't tell people, like, that you waited until the end of the movie and you're like, holy shit, that was Michael Fassbender. Because I would have never envisioned him taking a role like that, doing it so well. And then going to the places it does. I think it's a very brave movie. I love Lenny Abrahamson's other work. Abnormal People was one of my favorite pieces of any media. In the past forever, maybe even like I love that show so much, and he had a huge part to play in that. So yeah, Frank is a great one. I really need to revisit because I haven't seen it in quite a long time, but I remember really loving that movie. That's probably the only reason why it's like I didn't mention it as a runner-up or why I didn't consider it on my list, because I haven't seen it in so long.
Yeah, it's so extraordinary, and it's It's great. The underseen status of Frank kind of reminds me of a film that came out a little later called Brigsby Bear, which nobody talks about, which is so upsetting.
But I would say, though, I would say Brigsby Bear still has more fans than Frank does, which is a shame. Both movies are great, but you know.
They're both great. Yeah. They're both great. And, everyone out there, please, if you're able to find it anywhere, Please, Frank, for the love of God, watch Frank. It's so
if you're in North America, it's on Hulu right now. So
don't deprive yourself. There we go. Yeah, please. If you're here in North America, please watch it on Hulu. Please. It's 95 minutes. It flies by very quickly. Definitely. You won't regret spending 95 minutes with Michael Fassbender as Frank. Oh my God, it's so good. And the fact that this is based on a real person too is also mind-bending to me. Frank Seibaum was a real person who went down a similar path as this. He unfortunately passed away a few years ago. And you could tell that it was also a touch and tribute to the real inspiration for Frank as well. But yeah, guys, if you haven't seen Frank, please do yourself a favor and check it out. So before we get into talking about some of the Michael Fassbender films that didn't make the cut, let's recap our list from 5 to 1. So Michael, what is your list?
I believe, if I remember correctly, at number 5 is 12 Years a Slave. At number 4 is Shame. Number 3, Haywire. Number 2, Song to Song. And number 1, X-Men Days of Future Past.
And to recap my list, coming in number 5 is X-Men First Class. Number 4 is 12 Years a Slave. Number 3 is Steve Jobs. Number 2 is Shame. And number 1 is Frank. So that is over our list. So let's talk about some of the films that didn't make the cut. So Michael, what are some films that you want to give a shout out to?
Well, definitely, I'm still kicking myself about Steve Jobs. So that's the first one I'm going to give a shout out to, because that would have made the list. That easily would have made the list. I think Brian has said enough about that one to cover both of our feelings on it. But I will say, I mean, it's a very, especially, I know you're a fan of Steve Jobs, the man, and you're more aware of his history than I probably am. And coming into it kind of cold and not knowing all that much, did not feel like I was missing anything by it not being a traditional biopic. I thought, once again, the way it was handled, the performances, the visual little touches that Danny Boyle sneaks in there, and then obviously the dialogue from Sorkin, all phenomenal. Another flick I'd throw on there, obviously Hunger, I would give love to, too. I wouldn't say it was my cup of tea, but from an acting and directing standpoint, I think it's an amazing film, and one that it's another important film, obviously, due to the nature of its story, but very hard watch, and just, once again, Steve McQueen just full on making you feel oppressed as fuck while watching it and just making you feel down. And I mean, I guess this one is kind of a loose wreck because he's barely in this movie. But Inglourious Basterds, I mean, how could we not talk about that movie at least a little bit? Because he has one of the most iconic scenes in it.
100%.
Obviously, you know, most people I imagine have seen that movie, and most people would probably put that in their top 5. I didn't. I held off on it. Once again, same situation to Frank, where I just haven't seen it in a long time, so I don't want to fully stake my claim on my love for it quite yet. But from memory, phenomenal movie, and his one scene in it is so fucking good.
Oh man, it's great. For me, Hunger, absolutely major shout out to that. I mean, the one thing about Hunger that it's not a film that I could see myself really ever watching again. It's a great one time watch. But that long take, insane. Of like 20 minutes where it's just, oh my God.
Insane. Just dialogue. It's just dialogue.
Just dialogue. Him and Liam Cunningham just talking. I'm like, 17 minutes, I'm looking up right now. 17 minute shot. It's incredible. It's just him talking Michael Fassbender, this character, to stop from protesting for this hunger strike. And oh my God, incredible film. Fantastic stuff. Inglourious Basterds, I mean, definitely shout that out for sure. I'm a big fan of Prometheus. I think Prometheus is very underrated, and I love Fassbender in it. I think he's great as David. Yeah. And while I wasn't super high on Alien Covenant, I really liked what he brought to that film as well, especially the last sequence with him, that whole, like, sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs in, I'll tuck in the children. It's great. It's one. It's
still, I want to say, like, despite what everyone says about those two movies, I mean, holy fuck, he's amazing in them. He's so good.
I mean, he's so good. It's very hard to play stoic really, really well.
Yeah.
And the fact that he pulled it off really beautifully, it just says so much about what he was able to bring to that
and
film.
And then you even mentioned in Covenant, too, his other part in that is like the antithesis almost to that. And you're seeing both of them on screen at the same time. It's like, oh my God, masterful.
Oh, it's extraordinary stuff. It's extraordinary. And then I guess that's really it in terms of honorable mentions. I unfortunately haven't seen Slow West. I haven't seen Macbeth.
Slow West is good, too.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen Macbeth. I really want to see A Dangerous Method, the film he did with David Cronenberg. I want to see that. And Jane Eyre, I heard, is really good, too, with him and Mia Wasikowska. I do want to check that out for sure. But in terms of his films that are coming out, we have The Killer and Next Goal Wins coming out just a week apart from each other.
Crazy.
Technically, at the time of this recording, The Killer is available to see in theaters, but it hits Netflix on November 10th. Yeah. And Next Goal Wins opens up on November 17th. He also has a credit for Kung Fury 2, which I feel like has been in the making for a very long time.
Fucking development hell, so, yeah.
They claim that they shot the movie already. They claim they shot it already. So if it does come out this year, hey, I'll watch it. Kung Fury was a very good short film. But to talk specifically about The Killer and Next Goal Wins, talk about your anticipation for both of these films, if there's any anticipation at all.
Sure. Well, I'll talk about Next Goal Wins first. The trailer was okay. Taika Waititi, for me, has been very up and down, like I imagine he has been for most people. This definitely feels, at least from seeing the trailer and kind of reading about the story, definitely feels like something that has the potential to be better than his last couple movies, thankfully. But I'm not exactly gung-ho on the idea of Fassbender's main comeback to theaters being Next Goal Wins. I do obviously hope it's great, especially to show that culture. I think it's important to do that, and I think it's a cool opportunity to do so. Will it be done well? Who knows? You know, it could be an Aloha situation for all I know. So, you know, and then on the flip side of that, The Killer, I'm so jazzed about. I cannot wait to see it. I'm so jealous that you got to see it already. I know some friends that have seen it that loved it. I've been blowing my phone up about it. I'm a huge Fincher fan, as I talked about earlier. Obviously a huge Fassbender fan too. I've tried to stay away from trailers or really anything on it. I've only really seen the poster. So I'm over the moon that this is his big comeback movie.
Yeah, so I have seen both of these films. I saw Next Goal Wins at the world premiere at TIFF just a couple months ago. And I will say that Fassbender is, I think he's very good in the film. Mm-hmm. And it's great to see him, you know, like this is definitely more of a comedic side of Fassbender. It's not as comedic of a performance as his performance in Frank was, but it was definitely cool seeing him in this film, and I think he was a good fit for the role. You could say whatever you want about the film and everything, but I liked him in the role, and I thought he was one of the bright spots of it. Next Goal Wins wasn't a terrible film by any means. It's definitely much better than the last film that Taika Waititi directed, which we'll pretend doesn't exist. We'll pretend that his last film was Jojo Rabbit, which I actually really liked, Jojo Rabbit. But yeah, Next Goal Wins, like, it was cool seeing him back in a leading role and everything. And I technically saw this before I saw The Killer. The Killer, on the other hand, is a complete 180 from Next Goal Wins.
Sure.
And The Killer, I think, is not only one of Fassbender's best films, I think it's one of the best films of the year, personally. I walked into it very excited. I'm a big Fincher fan as well, just like Michael. And, you know, I have always thought that if there's one director that Michael Fassbender should work with, it's David Fincher. He just looks like he's perfect for David Fincher and everything. And oh my God, it's the perfect role for him. And I'm going to pretend that this is truly the comeback performance for Fassbender. He doesn't talk a lot throughout the movie. It's a very quiet performance and everything. There's a lot of narration here, but it's so extraordinary. It's your run-of-the-mill neo-noir thriller. There isn't anything groundbreaking about it, but Fincher likes to, the thing that Fincher likes to do is add his Fincher-isms throughout it that we just love to eat up, and it is such a blast. It moves so quickly. It is so energetic. It does not skip a beat at all, and Fassbender kicks so much ass. He is so perfect in this role. And you brought up before how, you know, maybe Haywire could have been like the way that Fassbender could have gotten the role of James Bond and everything. This, I think, is an even better depiction of how he really should be the next James Bond, if he ends up wanting to be the next James Bond. And, you know, one of my best friends, Zach, he is a huge 007 fan, and he has been campaigning for Fassbender to be the next Bond ever since Daniel Craig announced that he was leaving that role. And I was like, I don't know if I want Fassbender to play that role, because I love Fassbender. He's great. But I kind of want to see a smaller named actor, because Daniel Craig wasn't that big of a name at that time, here in the States. And now everybody knows who Daniel Craig is. But The Killer kind of made me eat my words, because I'm like, you know what? Maybe Fassbender should be the next James Bond, because he would do a great job in it. Yeah, The Killer is unbelievable. I'm so excited for you to see it. And if you're a big fan of Fincher, which you've talked about being one, you're definitely going to have a great time with the movie. You're going to.
I was
going to
say, I don't think there's any chance that I don't at least like this movie, guys.
there's no way. There's no way. Like, it's really wonderful, and it's a great comeback to the more high octane Fincher. I know a lot of people were missing that when he made Mank.
Sure.
A film that I personally don't dislike. I'm not as high on Mank as I want to be. I'm a huge Fincher fan as well, and that one, you know, it's good, but it's not exactly my favorite from Finchy. But he came back with this one, and it's great. It's really, really wonderful. I'm so excited for you to see The Killer, and I strongly advise everyone listening to this, if you have the opportunity to see this in a big on a big screen in the theater, please don't pass on that opportunity. This is a movie that's meant to be seen in a theater with a crowd. It's so much fun. It is so energetic. It is so thrilling. It's so, so, so good. I cannot wait for everyone to see it. And I really cannot wait to see whatever else Fassbender does. I'm trying to see if there's anything else listed for him. But there was, at a point, he was supposed to be in a film done by Nancy Myers. He was supposed to be the male lead of that. And, you know, no studio wanted to give Nancy Myers the budget that she quite frankly deserves. So that bumped me out, because it was supposed to be him and Scarlett Johansson together. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a perfect pairing for a Nancy Myers rom-com. Michael Fassbender in the rom-com? Oh, yeah. Oh my God, yeah, he would have kicked so much ass in that role. He would kick so much ass. How would you have felt seeing Michael Fassbender in a rom-com?
Of course.
He
could easily pull it off. I think he's been very charming in films before, and I think that obviously he's a very handsome man. Scarlett Johansson is a very attractive woman. They could make a handsome couple in a movie. It would be good.
It would be so good. But there is a film supposedly that he is making. It's a thriller from a South Korean filmmaker, and it's called The Hope, and it's co-starring Tara Russell and his wife, Alicia Vikander.
Oh, that's awesome.
I
haven't heard about this at
very,
all.
Very
sounds
cool.
Good.
That would be very cool. I love the idea of that. It's from the guy who made, let's see, what has he made? Oh, he made The Wailing,
which is one of my favorite South Korean movies. So that's awesome. Oh, holy crap.
That's a great movie. It's a great movie. It's a fucked up movie.
Oh yeah, it's very
great.
Upsetting. Talk about disturbing movies.
It's so good. No, that's awesome. That's so cool. And you know, to close out our thoughts on Fassbender, again, I genuinely stand by saying that he is one of the best actors working today. It's unfortunate that he doesn't have the status that a lot of these other actors that are popular get, because he should be in the same ranking as those actors. But in my heart, he is one of the best actors working today. And you know what? If he isn't as popular as other actors, so be it. There's always that one actor or actress that we may love that doesn't get the popularity that they deserve. Totally. But in my heart, Michael Fassbender is a star, and he will always be a star, and I will always be excited to see whatever he pumps out. So what are your closing thoughts on Michael Fassbender?
Well, one, I would implore everyone that, obviously we talked about the content of all these movies, so if you're brave enough or you feel comfortable enough to watch some of those more upsetting, you know, dark flicks that we recommended, please do so, because you're going to see an acting masterclass from this man. And then also watch Frank, dude. I mean, I think that and Steve Jobs and Song to Song should get the biggest shout-outs from this pod. Three of the more underseen movies from his filmography that I think people should really check out. He's a great performer. I mean, honestly, I would love to see him and McAvoy do something again in the future that isn't X-Men related, just to see that pairing once more, because, I mean, two of the greatest performers of our current time that are currently working, like you said, I think came from that movie, man. And I can't wait to see The Killer. Cannot wait. Honestly, can't wait to see Next Goal Wins, too, just so I can see Fassbender and to see if Taika made a movie that I can enjoy. So we'll find out.
I hope you can enjoy. But one thing you will be able to enjoy about that movie is his fantastic bleach blonde hair, because he absolutely
rocks some David
that hair.
Shit.
it's too good. It's too good. Michael, thank you so much for coming out to the show to talk to me about Michael Fassbender. Such a blast getting to have you on the show. Really, thank you so much for coming on.
Man, it's always a pleasure. Let me know when I can do this again, man. Doesn't matter. We can, you know, name an actor, name a series. We'll talk again, brother. We'll talk again.
Oh, 100%. Would love to have you on again. And I would love for you to tell the listeners where they could find you online.
Absolutely. Well, Letterboxd is generally where you can go for most of my movie thoughts. And that's just my name, Michael Chu. Twitter, Michael Chu, the number 4, and then Real. If you want to just check in on my day-to-day, all my silly little thoughts. And then obviously on YouTube, also Michael Chu. We're still, listen, Brian probably knows this, the YouTube game with copyright stuff is impossible. So if you're a fan of mine that is coming to listen to Brian's show, one, good. This is a great show. And then two, apologies for that last episode of Woodsboro Retrospective just being delayed for God knows. It's been like 6 months, dude. We got all of them out, the first bunch of them, all month to month, fine. And then this one just completely messed up the flow. And it happens. But, you know, eventually it'll come out and we're still going to be making stuff. So stay tuned. That's the best thing I can say right now.
I can't wait to see what you pump out next. Guys, I will put the link to all of Michael's content down in the description below where you can follow him and find him. And you guys can follow me on all social medias at Brian Suffield, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. You guys can subscribe to this podcast on any podcast platform. We have a Twitter and Instagram so you guys can stay up to date with what's going on in Film Fragments. Let us know your favorite film starring Michael Fassbender. I'm really curious to hear your guys' list. And tell us how excited you are for the two films that he has coming out. It's a great time, again, like I said, to be a fan of Michael Fassbender, especially considering that he has two very different films coming out, showcasing two different sides of his acting chops. Love that for him. Cannot wait to see him back in the spotlight. And guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Film Fragments. I really, really appreciate it. And I will see you guys for the very next episode of Film Fragments. Take care, everybody.